Welcome in, 10:06 on 720 WGN. Jordan Bernfield with you tonight, and really glad to be here on this Friday evening. I like this shift. You know, you get to fill your day with some different activities that you get to come in here and hang out. And for those of you that are with me, we'll be here until 1 o'clock. Michael Heidemann is our producer. He's a music guy. I like to think of myself as someone who really appreciates good music. I play guitar. I wouldn't say I play it extremely well, but I play it. And so I really appreciate good music. And tonight, that's one of the big themes of our show. We're going to interview two musicians on the show tonight and two guys that I am a real big fan of. In the 12 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Robbie Gold. Many of you who listen to this station have probably heard him before because he has been on the station several times. Now, I realized after doing my research for this show that he has been on the station quite a few times now. But Robbie and I actually grew up together in the north suburbs. We used to go to Cubs games together as teenagers. And now, you know, he's gigging all over Chicago and making his way as a musician who's a really talented guy. So he'll be here in the 12 o'clock hour to talk about his career. We're going to hear a song that he's going to play live in studio, and it's going to be a lot of fun. In the 11 o'clock hour, Adam Hogue is going to join me to talk a little bit about your Chicago Bears, because I can't be here for 3 hours and not talk sports. You crazy? Of course I'm going to do a little sports. So we're going to do that, talk about the hiring of David Ross as the Cubs' new manager. But we're going to start the show tonight with an artist that I've become a real big fan of. I think he is immensely talented. His name is Dan Rodriguez. He's based out of Minnesota. I went to his show. He was performing with Matt Hyers and J.D. Eicher, who, coincidentally, Matt Hyers is in Orland Park tomorrow. But Dan Rodriguez and Matt and J.D. played a show at Bourbon on Division over in Wicker Park. If you have never been there, they have a cool little room upstairs at the bar. And it's a really nice, intimate room to get to see a concert. And my buddy Brian took me to this show. He's like, you're going to love this guy. He plays at the Rock Boat. He's kind of, you know, he's really starting to make it. His songs have been in some big-time commercials, which we'll get into, because you got to check this guy out. He's really good. Incredible voice, great guitar playing, really good musician, and just like a talented dude, you know, a guy that can put together really interesting music. And his backstory is fascinating. There are a lot of things that I learned in this interview with Dan Rodriguez that, frankly, I did not know about him. So I think you're going to really enjoy it. So that's coming up right here next on WGN, and we're going to do a lot of music and a lot of sports tonight. So hang with me. I'm Jordan Bernfield. This is 720 WGN. In 25 years, I've been looking at you, wondering what did I do to find someone like this. In 25 more, we'll be looking older. Our story won't be over. All we'll need is another 25 years. Welcome back, 720 WGN. Jordan Bernfield with you tonight, and I'm really excited about having my next guest. I really enjoy listening to his music and have gotten to see him a couple of times in concert now, once last year and once just a few weeks ago. And then I thought, after seeing him play, we should have him on the show, because I think a lot of people would want to hear him too. You just heard him coming back from the commercial break. That's his song, 25 Years. And my guest is Dan Rodriguez, who is a awesome musician who I'm a fan of. So, Dan, thanks so much for taking the time on the show tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jordan. Appreciate it.
So let's talk about first how you started out, because before we get to the current music and we talk about your upcoming tour, I wanted to kind of find out more about how this all started. So just as a general question, when did you start playing music or becoming interested in music, and what led you, I think, to this career? Did you know when you were a little kid that this is what you were going to be doing?
Oh, man, I could write a book about that question. But the long story short is I was homeschooled as a young boy, all the way up until high school, and all my siblings were. And my parents put us in music lessons. And so at a young age, I was taking music lessons, and I started with voice lessons, and then I did I did drum lessons, and I did violin lessons, and eventually I found, when I was 15, I picked up my first guitar. And That's when music kind of became healing for me. And I wrote my first songs. And so for me, at a young age, at the age of 15, I knew that songwriting and playing those songs that were from my heart were a way of healing. Because we had a brother, one of our brothers passed away when I was 15. And that was kind of what one of my first songs were about. And so I just held on to it because I found an outlet for that energy. And then from there, I realized a few years later that girls liked when guys sang and played guitar. And I was really interested in girls. And so I found myself learning all the John Mayer songs that I could, including his song No Such Thing, which is sings about running through the halls of your high school and screaming at the top of your lungs. And I auditioned to play that song, which was our class song. I auditioned to play it at our graduation ceremony when I was 18, and I got it.
Wow.
And so I sang at Pine Mound Music Theater, and because my class was 750 kids. I graduated from Clarkston High School in Michigan. And so 750 kids graduating means there are a few thousand people at this amphitheater. And I played that song in front of those people. I was 18 years old, and I walked off the stage. And that was the moment that I thought, I want to do that. I want to experience that feeling that I just had for the rest of my life. And that's what kind of set me on this path.
That's amazing. So when you were 15, you said you started writing songs that were based off of your brother passing. And I'm just curious as to what that experience was like for you, because I can imagine it was incredibly cathartic, but at the same time, probably difficult. But it's interesting how you talk about guitar as a way of healing.
Yeah. So for me, learning how to write songs from the heart, it was less about the guitar back then and more about finding a way to accompany my voice and my lyrics. And it was just for me, you know. I wasn't performing those songs. It was just an outlet for that energy that was in my heart that I needed to put somewhere. And it saves, you know, music can save so many people. And I really do think it saved me from trouble or alcohol or booze, or drug abuse or things like that. And things that people could fall easily into when they're going through pain or hurt or tragedy. And it gave me a positive outlet, and I felt so good. And so I just continued to chase after that. And later on, as I got better as a guitar player, I was able to learn how to speak with the guitar and through the music without the singing as well, and creating a mood and an experience with that. And so all of those things come together. And today I write the songs that are the same way for me. I write the songs that matter, the songs that are my truth, songs about being away from home and being on tour and missing my family and missing my kids and my wife and things like that. And that's what I'm able to tap into today as well. And those are the songs that connect the most with other people.
Talking to musician Dan Rodriguez here on 720 WGN. And Dan, one of the things that you just said that piqued my interest was how you wanted to play No Such Thing by John Mayer. And that was a song that you were into, because I'm a huge John Mayer fan myself, and I think he's an incredible guitar player and singer. Was he one of your biggest influences growing up? And if not just him, who were the people that you think shaped the way that you play music?
Well, I actually had a pretty narrow scope of folks that shaped my music, because I mentioned being homeschooled, but part of being homeschooled was because of the separatist, fundamentalist Christian household that I grew up in. And I have a great relationship with my folks and all my siblings and things. But when we grew up, that was where we kind of all stood, and that's how we were raised. And so we were homeschooled because they didn't want us learning about evolution or things that were outside of what that faith said that they believed in. And so I was also not allowed to listen to music that wasn't about Jesus. And so I think anybody that's listened to both Christian and non-Christian music can agree that there's a smaller window for high quality Christian music. at least there was back then. And so while my friends were listening to AC/DC and, you know, all these rock and roll bands, and then they were listening to whatever was coming out the top and, on top of the charts, I was listening to Rebecca St. James and Stephen Curtis Chapman, and they're all great artists in their own right, but they weren't musically influencing me. And it wasn't until somebody made me a mixed CD that, had everything on it. I mean, it was,
yeah, what was on that
AC/DC.
CD?
AC/DC is the Beastie Boys. David Bowie was on there, and Jeff Buckley. Now, when I heard Jeff Buckley sing Hallelujah, something changed in me. And then I listened to that whole record, that Grace album with Lilac Wine and Lover, You Should Have Come Over, and some of those deeper cuts that there was for me. I was like, this is speaking to me. And then I listened to some Joe Cocker, and then I was influenced by these other different people. And so a lot of that, like, older, very soulful stuff started popping up in my, that my friends were giving me. And these are older friends of mine, and they're saying, you need to listen to good music. And so I started going down that path, and I was in Detroit. It's where I grew up, is the suburbs of Detroit. But I kind of latched onto this idea that I have the Motown in my blood. And so everything that I do today is still has that old soul influence as well. And that's all throughout. That's kind of scattered throughout all my music.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely hear that, and I hear what you're saying. That's so interesting, though, that for so many years, you didn't really get a chance to hear all these different artists, but then you learn them later. I know that you have the Christmas EP, but then, interestingly, later in your catalog, and on your Roaring Dan album from 2013, you have Hallelujah on there, but then at the end, because this is on radio, I'll refer to it as the D-bag song, but you have them both in the same track, right? So was there sort of this, I don't know, this rebelliousness that came along with having, you know, a religious-based song to then having that at the end? Or what was the purpose for that? Because it seems like there's almost a little bit of rebellion here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Leonard Cohen would even say that Hallelujah is a religious song in any way. I would say maybe it's more of a spiritual song than anything. If you really listen to the lyrics on that song, I mean, one of the lyrics says, he says, maybe there's a God above. But all I've ever learned from love is how to shoot somebody who outdrew you. So that song, I've never viewed that song as a religious song, even though it's got that word in it. But the juxtaposition of a beautiful and heartfelt song leading into the D-bag song is absolutely, for me, a little piece of rebellion. But I'm a third child, and a third of six, and so I sat in the middle, and that was just kind of always my MO anyway. I was always kind of the one on the edge, pushing the envelope, not following all the rules. And I'm happy I was that kid, because it's led me to where I'm at today.
Dan's going to stick around with me for one more segment. I want to ask him about a song that you may have heard. If you think about a famous former commercial, you might remember one of his songs. If you go look it up after you hear what we talk about on the show, and also talk about his upcoming All I Want for Christmas is Whiskey tour. He is musician Dan Rodriguez joining us here on 720 WGN. 10:28 here on 720 WGN. Jordan Burnfield back with you right after the 10:30 news. We will continue our conversation with Dan Rodriguez. Lots more to discuss with him. Really a fascinating guy and a really fantastic musician. He does definitely influence, or his music is definitely influenced by the Christian upbringing that he has, but it's not what you would think. You know, it's not like all the songs that he's doing are Christmas songs, but he does definitely have some of that imagery that comes through in some of the lyrics of his music, or some of the ways that his music is expressed. He does have a Christmas album out, so there is that. But I think that what's so fascinating about him is that the way that he grew up in a homeschooled environment, in a very religious household, and then sort of just breaking through and finding his voice in all this different type of music. What I really liked about what he said in that first part of the interview is how he's able to create mood with music. And if you go find Dan Rodriguez's catalog, you can find it on Spotify, you can find it on YouTube, all sorts of places that you can get the music. You definitely get that sort of vibe in some of the songs. Some of them are really upbeat. Some of them are much slower, but really beautiful and really artistically written, not both in terms of the musical style and the lyrics. And you can tell that this is someone that has trained his voice. He's a really, really talented singer. And he's also, it's funny that it doesn't really come through as much in this interview, but he's a pretty funny dude too. So when you go see him in concert, you kind of get that vibe as well. But almost 10:30 coming up, we're going to have Roger Badish with the news. And then following that, we will continue our conversation with musician Dan Rodriguez, who will be in Chicago at City Winery on December 11th. Right now, time for the news.
Ooh, I'll be waiting here for you when you come home. When you come home.
Welcome back. 720 WGN, Jordan Burnfield with you tonight, and that song is called I'll Be Waiting When You Come Home. It is by the artist Dan Rodriguez, fantastic musician who I really enjoy listening to, and he is kind enough to continue to join us here on 720 WGN. I'm curious because you've had some real hits, to me at least, and I know that 25 Years is probably the song that is most known of yours, and unless you disagree, and you could feel free to tell me, but which was the song, if it wasn't 25 Years, where you felt, after you wrote it, you thought, this is it. I've written a song that I think can be one that I feel good about being famous for that.
That's a great question. I would agree with you that 25 Years is the one that most people at shows are singing along to. Including you.
Yeah.
And I had a really great experience this past summer at Mile of Music up in Appleton, where 7,000 people came out to watch my set down at Jones Park. And there's a video on my Instagram that is this moment where I started, there's a down chorus in that song, and I just stepped away from the microphone because everyone had been singing along, and you could just hear thousands of people singing my song. And that was my moment where I was like, whoa, they know it. And it's not just, I'm not just a dude up here. Like, they know this song. They've listened to this a lot, and they know the lyrics. And so that was really, really cool. But I think every song is one that I kind of walk away from hoping that it has something, it does something bigger than that moment that I've wrote it. But at the same time, I found myself in this really great place of peace with songwriting, because I think writers kind of can chase different things. And for a long time, I was chasing after a publishing deal in Nashville, and I was trying to get more songs in movies and television and commercials, and I started writing more for that. And it really wasn't until recently that I said, I got to stop chasing after the things that are inauthentic for myself and just chase after those 25 Years type songs that are just from the heart. I mean, that song is about my wife and I dancing together while she's wearing her wedding dress on our anniversary, and dancing to the song she walked down the aisle to. Like, that's just a very personal moment. And that's like one of our most intimate, just the two of us moments. And I wrote about it because it means so much to me, and it connected with so many people. And I think that's more than hoping I get a million streams on Spotify on a song, or more than hoping it goes to radio and it gets blasted everywhere. And for me, it's more about having truth and being able to write about truth and my own truth. And if it takes off because of that, awesome. But I definitely don't want to write a song because I'm chasing after fame. I want to write it because it matters to me.
So off of that, you do have a couple of songs that have made very sort of famous cameos, right? You think When You Come Home was in a Budweiser ad that ran during the Super Bowl. So I'm curious, yeah, for someone who is continuing to ascend in music, but as we all know, it's so hard to get to that sort of top level. What is it like when you hear your song being played in a commercial that gets that kind of plays, but at the same time, you know, you still feel like you're chasing? It's like, my song aired during the Super Bowl, but I want to be at this level or that level. What is that sort of like for you, or what is the headspace on that?
You know, that's a good question too. For me, it's just I lucked out a little bit with that one. It was kind of like the stars aligning, and it was a great opportunity, and it opened a lot of doors and publishing houses in Nashville and things, and it kind of set me in a different headspace for what work can look like in the songwriting world. But at the same time, I mean, that song, if you listen to those lyrics, that's just a love song that could be for anyone. Like, that's a love song to a friend or to a lover or to a family member. And it's just about being there for each other. And wherever you end up, wherever you go, I'm just going to love you no matter what. And that's truth. I mean, those are the things that people can grab onto and move forward with in their own life. That's the kind of a song that can become the soundtrack to somebody's life, because it's so specific, but it's not. And when I try to write songs like that, it doesn't work out. When I don't try and I just speak from the heart, those are the songs that happen.
It seems like that's always where genius comes from, right? When you're not trying, then all of a sudden you come up with something that you just take the pressure off. But I know that you're home right now, and you're a Minnesota guy, so I'm sure it's even colder there than it is here today. But you're going back out on tour, and I've seen you perform a couple of times, both times you were playing just you and a guitar. But I know you have a tour with your band coming up. I'm curious, which experience maybe you like more, having yourself with a band or just being you and a guitar and kind of playing more that, I hate to sound cliche, but that sort of coffee shop kind of vibe?
Sure, yeah. I would say, yeah, I would definitely, like, another way to say it is like listening room vibes.
Yeah.
And that's like, I mean, I love both experiences. I love rocking out with a band and ripping guitar solos and grooving with a drum and bass rhythm section, and I love the fullness of it. I love how much I can relax because I'm not having to carry everything with my voice the entire time. But at the same time, I have an equal love for being able to just sing out and tell stories with one guitar and not feel the pressure of, all right, we have produced this so that right when that song ends, the drum groove for the next song starts. And it's like, that kind of a show is a production. The other kind of a show is more of a storyteller vibe. And I love both experiences, and I've got to play some really big rooms in both ways and some really cool ones, like that, the Bluebird down in Nashville is this little small listening room. And I love that. I love playing in that room because you can hear a pin drop when it's just me and my guitar. You can hear a pin in that room because everybody's just listening to every note and every word. And but at the same time, there's no energy like a club full of people front to back, left to right, all the way up to the stage, jamming, singing along to your songs with a full band rocking behind you. They're both equally incredible experiences.
So you're going to start in California, but then you're going to Texas, you're going to Colorado, you're going up to the Pacific Northwest, and then you're going to be back here in Chicago. So December 11th at City Winery, part of the All I Want for Christmas is Whiskey tour, which again, maybe that's the theme of the juxtaposition, right? I know that that's musically thematic, the name of your tour, but it seems like we found a pattern here, huh?
Yeah. Well, the tour I'm on right now is I'm doing 6 weeks supporting a gentleman named Tyrone Wells. And it's been awesome so far. We did 3 weeks already. I've got another three coming up. And then I've got a headlining tour, which is my Christmas tour, like you were talking about. And that's so much fun. That's full band. And it's almost all holiday music. And there's a point in the show where the band walks off the stage and I sit in a chair and I drink a glass of whiskey and I read a parody of 'Twas the Night Before Christmas that I write every year. And, so it's a kind of a little bit of a variety show, and it ends in a sing-along. And the hope is that people just walk away having laughed maybe even cried, and then how does what they walk away with an experience of feeling like they're ready to walk into the holiday season, and that's what that show brings. And I've had so many people say that, oh, I'm in the Christmas spirit now, or they find themselves really enamored by that whole magical feeling, and I love that I get to be a part of that for them.
That's awesome. Well, best of luck with the upcoming continuation of that tour, and with All I Want for Christmas is Whiskey tour, and I will see you at the Chicago show. I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jordan. Have a good one.
All right, that's Dan Rodriguez joining us here on 720 WGN, and if you want to check out his music, you can visit his website, danrodriguezmusic.com. You can find his albums and his tour dates and all those things, so you can buy tickets to go see him. Little Bears talk when we come back in the 11 o'clock hour. Adam Hoge, the Bears insider right here for this station, will join me. We'll break down the whole mess that is Mitchell Trubisky, team meetings, leadership questions, all that when we come back. 720 WGN. 1048, 720 WGN. I'm Jordan Burnfield. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Dan Rodriguez. Really interesting young musician who is starting to really make it. That's one of the things, Mike, you said this to me before the show, and I know that you play music and you're into the music scene, and I thought this was so well put. You said there's almost a level of crazy, I guess, right, that you are trying to make it in a business where there's basically a 0.01% chance that you make it. And it's such a personal experience, right? You watch people who are writing music, putting together something that could make them so vulnerable, and then performing it in front of all the people that they know. Mm-hmm. And so the entire idea of it, the way you put it, and I hope I'm saying it even close to the way you did, but it is sort of a fascinating thing. And you write music and you perform music. So tell me what, like, I don't know what that experience is like, but I would imagine it's kind of nerve wracking, but also empowering.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about crushing your fear when you're playing music that obviously you've got to have a few screws loose to be able to do this. And you mentioned the fact that it's a 0.01% chance to even make it. It's a 0.01 chance to make it and just play on the weekends here in Chicago,
yeah.
Let alone become somebody like Bruce Springsteen or in a band that's touring the world or having 7,000 people in a park singing along with your song. I mean, that percentage is even smaller.
Yeah, well, just to think, like you were saying, you know, I think sometimes when you go see a concert, like when the Rolling Stones were in Chicago, for mm-hmm. instance. Now, granted, they're one of the most successful bands in music history.
Yeah,
but
I've heard
the point
of them.
Is, you know, yeah, but they come to Chicago and could sell out a week at Soldier Field, mm-hmm. right? Like, it doesn't matter how many shows they have, they will sell them all out. If Dead & Company comes to Wrigley Field or Soldier Field or any of these places, they'll sell them out as many nights as they have, because there's a lot of guys in their 60s that are going to wear tie-dye and they're going to go and they're going to partake in soon-to-be illegal drugs in Illinois and have
yeah.
themselves a hell of a good time. But that is so rare. Mm-hmm. That's what is taking place everywhere else is, you know, I went tonight and my guitar teacher is a musician who was playing a gig tonight, and I went to a little show at the Red Room in Wicker Park, and I, you know, probably, I don't know, 100-ish people in there, and it was so cool to be in that venue. They do a great job in there, and it's really intimate, and you're sitting very close to the stage, and my guitar teacher was one of the people performing, Jake Haverlack, and so it was just so cool to watch, because it's like, you know, I take lessons from them, but you don't know what their expression of music is until you see it. And it was really cool for me to get to watch that. And I think you're right. There is something so vulnerable yet empowering, and it's just such a unique thing to watch
yeah.
people play.
That's why it's so cool when you're speaking to a musician. And like, I love the interview you did with Dan. He's I've never heard of him until tonight, and now I want to go and check out his music, because you're right. When you're sitting there, you've been around this person who's your guitar teacher. You've spoken to them, have conversations, but there's something about music that just kind of opens up a whole new world to their life. You're like, oh, that's what they were really feeling inside. And something about tying in your words with the sound that is coming out of a guitar or a piano and just singing a melody is
yeah.
something that everyone can relate to, and everyone just can connect to. There's something so emotional about it. That's why songs are so beautiful, and they've always been around for years and years. And that's why 7,000 people can join together. It's the only way. Like, you wouldn't go to a comedy show and everyone's like quoting. Well, I guess you could. You could, you know, be quoting the joke or something like that at a comedy show. But everyone can find a sense of community in music through just finding their own meaning for a song. It's a very, very personal thing.
It is. And it just shows how hard it is to, quote unquote, make it. Because I think Dan is, you know, he's a pretty successful guy. Every city he goes to, there are fans that he's bringing into that place. You know, it's not just he right now he's opening for Tyrone Wells, whose music I'm less familiar with. But my buddy and I went to see Dan, you know, and there were plenty of us at City Winery when we went, I don't know, two and a half weeks ago that were there really for him and not for the main act. And nothing against, I mean, Tyrone is very talented too. But the point is, Dan's bringing people in wherever he goes.
Yeah.
Even if it's not, you know, 8,000 at every show yet, I watch him and I'm like, man, this guy is awesome. And you hear the voice and you see him playing. And, you know, so it just makes you appreciate that there is a whole lot of luck in certain respect and just being in the right place in the right time to become Bruce Springsteen or the Rolling Stones or whoever it is, where you get to be mega famous. Because there's people like Dan, who I think are on, you know, a really good, accomplished level. But to get to the top level is just so unbelievably hard.
And it's interesting that you mentioned the fact that you were there to see Dan, the opener, because there is something about going to see the opening act, like having them and knowing who they were at the beginning, the first stages of their career, because at an eventual point, they could get to that big stage. So it's like a weird sense of community when you're like, oh, I'm here to see him, not the headliner. I'm here to see the guy who's opening up for him.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit more personal. And the fact that you can have a conversation with him is really special. Because there's something about just starting out and carrying around, and I know this from playing music. I play downtown at this place in River North called Bill's every single Saturday.
I'm going to need to come and see you play, Mike. Now I really want to come and watch you play.
Come every Saturday, 9 until midnight, down in River North at Bill's Bar and Burger. It's the pain of just carrying that box of T-shirts and selling them to people. Or like bringing your own gear and hauling those pedals and your guitar case everywhere. And it's something about how you can connect with that kind of paying your dues that I think music, everyone can kind of relate to. You're like, oh, I see that person actually put in the hard work to become a musician. That's why it's so cool to see the Rolling Stones at a stage, because you think about when they were playing open mics themselves back in England or whatever, and the fact that they needed to play song after song after song and get rejected, and there were people probably right. were like, you guys suck, to the Rolling Stones, and now they're like the biggest band in the entire world. So
right.
It's,
well,
yeah,
it's like that it's scene, awesome. And I know the Bohemian Rhapsody was sort of a, you know, not really the greatest telling of the truth of the Beatles or of Queen's story. I mean, there's some things that are true, obviously, but they took a lot of liberties.
I wanted to see a little bit more nitty gritty. I could
yes.
say that. Yeah.
But I did think it was sort of like that cliched but sort of appropriate thing when you watch that movie when they presented Bohemian Rhapsody to the music agent. He's like, oh, this is too long. This will never fly.
Right.
And now it's like one of the most popular songs in music. So that was clearly a whiff. But no, it's really. There's nothing really like that connection to live music. And we're going to talk to Robbie Gold in the midnight hour about his music, because he's gigging all over the place. You've probably seen him at Wrigley. You've probably seen him at several bars around Chicago. Really talented guy. And he's going to play a song for us in studio coming up at midnight. But we're going to do sports coming up next. Adam Hogue from right here at WGN Radio, our Bears insider, is going to be with us. We're going to talk a little bit about the Bears and what to do about where they're going, because they're 3-3 and it feels like everything is bad and awful. And we're going to see what he can give us in terms of trying to mellow out all this badness with the Bears. And then we'll also talk about David Ross, the new manager of the Cubs. Coming up at the 11 o'clock hour, Jordan Burnfield with you, 720 WGN. Welcome back, 720 WGN. Jordan Burnfield with you tonight. Really glad to be talking a lot of music on the show tonight, but we're going to shift back to sports conversation, and you know this voice coming up next. He is the Bears insider for WGN Radio. He is Adam Hogue. Thanks so much for making a few minutes for me tonight. Really appreciate it, Adam.
No problem, Jordan. Good to talk to you.
So let's talk about where the Bears are at right now, because they're 3-3, but you know from covering this team for all the years that you have that often the narrative isn't quite what the reality is. Though with this particular situation, it feels like while they're 3-3 and they're facing a Chargers team that has struggled, obviously, to this point in the year with all the injuries they've suffered, that the record doesn't even matter because it feels like in the macro, things can't go where Bears fans want them to go. And I have to admit, I feel a little bit concerned about all this team meeting stuff and trying to boost Mitch Trubisky's confidence. So I'll start with this. Is it as bad as Chicago is making it out to be right now?
It's pretty bad. I mean, just now, is it something that can still be salvaged this year? I mean, even though most of the evidence right now is pointing to no, there still is time and there still is, you know, an opportunity. And I still think there's talent on this football team. So that's the good news, I guess. But, you know, there were signs that this was starting to fall apart. I remember saying before the game in London against the Raiders that I could see a scenario in which they laid an egg, because there was a lot of noise going on around that week. Just things that, you know, we had the big Roquan Smith thing. Why didn't he play against the Vikings, for instance? So you had that going on. And then you had them leaving late in the week, and that was sort of a controversy. I thought it was a little overblown, but there was a lot of stuff suggesting that maybe they would not show up with their A game, and sure enough, they didn't. Then they had their bye week, and I said going into the game against the Saints last week that it was a must win, which you could say, oh, well, it's only week 7. How could it be a must win? Well, if you look at the NFC right now, there's a lot of good teams, and it's going to be really hard to get in as a wild card. This might be a year where a 10-6 team does not get in as a wild card, which means you have to win your division. And the Packers have been pulling away. So you can't afford to fall behind. You can't afford to lose another home game. And you had an opportunity with Drew Brees and Alvin Kamara out to beat a pretty good Saints team. And obviously, they laid another egg, one that was even worse. So there are a lot of concerns. I think all the criticism is fair this week. What I've been trying to do is figure out specifically on offense what's wrong. Is it the scheme? Is it that Matt Nagy's not actually that great of a coach like we thought he was, or an offensive mind like we thought he was, or is it execution? And that's what I ended up writing about on WGNRadio.com today.
Yeah, because I want to get into that more. What do you believe is the problem? Because I don't think there's anyone in Chicago that has analyzed Mitch Trubisky more than you. I remember reading that real long piece you did about all of the plays that he had last season, which was incredible work, with how thorough it was and all the analysis that you did. I feel like no one knows Mitch in terms of the player other than the coaches better than you. So is it him, or is it the coach, or is it a combination of all of those things?
Well, I think on the micro with Mitch, a lot of it is him. I mean, this is an offense that shouldn't be. I mean, it's complicated, but it's still built around having solutions, making the defense be wrong. You know, under John Fox, for example, the Bears just kind of went out there and ran what they did. They weren't too concerned about what the defense was doing. Certainly, they were game planning, but the difference between that scheme and what Matt Nagy does is all that motion you see, all the sort of gimmicks that are built into a play, is really there to help the quarterback diagnose what's going on before the snap and to know which guy's going to be open and then get the ball into the hands of the playmakers. And it's not like they've been running out very difficult throws for him to make. For me, most of this is just from the neck up. He's struggling to read what's in front of him. He's struggling to see the field. There's a couple breakdowns I had in my piece today on WGNRadio.com that you can go and read and see the video if you want to see it. But, you know, this sack that he took on a run pass option when the Bears were driving down into the Saints territory. It's been talked about a lot this week. But just the idea of he struggled to read what Cam Jordan was doing, who was an unblocked defender on the play, which is the whole point of the play, to make that player commit one way or the other, and then the quarterback should have either an easy handoff or somebody open. Now, Mitch said this week he thought he should have handed the ball off. I actually think Cam Jordan did a really good job of making it hard for Mitch to read that. So I can say, all right, look, I understand why you may have screwed that part up a little bit. What I don't understand is he had a guy wide open in front of him, Anthony Miller, and for some reason he turned around to the opposite side of the field and looked for Allen Robinson, who was not a quick throw, not a quick read, and it just really makes no sense why he did that. Those are the types of things that that just point to that part of this being Mitch Trubisky screwing up, if we're going to say it bluntly. When he threw the ball away on fourth down in the fourth quarter, I mean, to me, that's a low point. It's fourth down. You don't throw a ball away on fourth down when you're trailing by that much. At that point, you just force a pass because it's a turnover anyway. And what I didn't see until I went back and watched the tape, Jordan, is that Anthony Miller came across the formation wide open on a shallow cross and was going to have nobody near him if Mitch got him the ball. And he just never saw it. So this is just, I don't know, when it comes to the quarterback spot, I don't know what else to do than put it on the quarterback.
Okay, so we're talking to Adam Hogue here on 720 WGN. Is he a lost cause? And if so, what does this mean from the macro with the Bears? Because we all know that Ryan Pace, up until this year, the narrative had been that, you know, he's done a great job, he's built this great defense, he hired the coach that could turn the quarterback into a star, he's going to get better, they're going to go to the Super Bowl, everything's great, right? So now that the worst case scenario appears to be happening, is Mitch now a lost cause? And if so, are they blowing this thing up next year and going to get a new quarterback?
Well, I'm not ready to call him a complete lost cause because he's not getting much help. I mean, is he going to be a superstar in the NFL? I think we're at the point where that's a pretty hard no. But this should at least be as good as what it was last year, right? And he had some really good performances last year, and he had games where they're moving the ball. Now, it wasn't great at the end of the year, and this goes back to what you talked about earlier, my breakdown of the entire 2018 season. It still left the door open for two possibilities. I mean, the people that liked what they saw from Mitch, you could view it optimistically that he was going to take the next step in 2019, which is where I was. That's what I thought was going to happen. And then I also admitted, though, there's plenty of negative here from the 2018 tape that if you're more negative on how you're looking at him, you could see it go the complete opposite way. Let's get back now to what else is happening on the offense and why it's not helping Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, you can't only run the ball seven times against the Saints. That's on Matt Nagy, at least part of it. Now, some of that's RPOs that are being changed to runs. I get it. But Matt Nagy needs to commit to the run. That would help Mitchell Trubisky. And then you talk about what's going wrong and why they're struggling to run the football. One-man breakdowns. I mean, it's every single play, it seems to be somebody else. Like, sometimes it's the center. Sometimes it's the guard. Then it's a tight end. Somebody's not blocking. First play of the game, they hand the ball off to Tariq Cohen. James Daniels knocked Cody Whitehair down. They didn't block the play correctly. They fumbled Anthony Miller when he ran around to the right side and fumbled the ball. Trey Burton just didn't block his guy. I mean, you can point at the scheme as much as you want, but to me it comes down to execution, and these guys aren't getting the job done. And if they did, life would be much easier on the quarterback, who I think at a minimum would be as good as he was last year. Right now he has regressed. I also don't think he's getting a lot of help.
So then, is Matt Nagy just not as good a coach as we thought? Because I don't want to overreact here, and I don't think that – I was always skeptical of Trubisky, but it's starting to feel like – and I hate to use this, but it's starting to feel a little Trestman-like, right? That they're having team meetings, and it's trying to find leadership midway through a season, and they're trying to build up the quarterback. The difference is that – Nagy doesn't use these corny phrases like grow the man and all this stuff that Trestman was using, but I hate to say it's kind of feeling like that. Am I overstating it?
Well, it's certainly not good when you're having players-only meetings. Good teams don't have players-only meetings. That's just something that's obvious. So they're clearly at somewhat of a crossroads here, and they need some really good leadership to dig them out. Now, Matt Nagy, the head coach, I still believe in. I do not think this is Mark Trestman. I was in that building every single day in 2014, and even in 2013, his first year, you saw signs that there were people, whether it was things they're saying behind the scenes or just some of the things that were happening around the organization, you could tell there was some doubt. We're not all that far removed from Buster Skrine calling Matt Nagy a god after the Week 2 win in Denver. So I still think he has this locker room. I don't think he's lost the locker room. I don't think he's on the verge of losing the locker room. But anytime you're having players-only meetings, it's not a good thing. But it's also a sign that you're losing games. So one thing I pointed out earlier this week, remember Swaggy Nagy?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the nickname his own players gave him. I don't know what happened. I think it goes back to two big things to me happened against the Packers in Week 1. Mitch lost his confidence because he had 8 months leading up to that game where it was all positive talk. All these good things were going to happen, and the opposite happened. And I think he lost his confidence that day. And I also think Matt Nagy somewhere along the way lost his swagger in that game because he showed up at Soldier Field in a Papa Bear costume. I mean, he was ready to go dressed as George Halas. That's the Swaggy Nagy that we, you know, all knew in 2018. And ever since then, there just hasn't been that same vibe, not the same play calls, not the same creativity. We haven't seen the defensive players lining up on offense. We haven't seen Willy Wonka, Santa Slay, all that stuff. However, that still goes back to the execution because this offense is always based on building plays on plays, okay? You can't get to the secondary plays on your play sheet or the crazy plays like Willy Wonka and Santa Slay until you execute the very basic stuff that you're trying to put out there in the first quarter. And that's been a problem. The Bears have gotten off to slow starts. They're not executing the stuff that they script all week long early in games. And that's preventing Nagy, I think, from being that guy with that swagger that's tricking other teams with all his creativity. And it's just sort of snowballing. So the Bears really need to get back to the fundamentals, the basics, hitting those plays that are obvious early in games. That'll set up to the stuff later that is all that swagger that we talk about with Matt Nagy.
Yeah, it's really it's something to see how much this narrative has changed, and it just feels to me, and one more before we let you go, sure. It feels to me like, you know, they went into the season with all this hype, and the idea that the quarterback could have lost his confidence in one game, I keep coming back to this idea that how could Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy and all these people in the Bears front office have whiffed when it comes to what's between the ears of the quarterback. But I guess therein lies the difficulty in selecting a player. Not to suggest that Mitch Trubisky couldn't regain his confidence, but isn't that why this is so difficult to do? Because he's got the measurables physically, but you can't control what's going on in a guy's head.
Well, there's just no way to predict how that player is going to be once he gets to the NFL. It's just a different world. This is the hardest thing in scouting, whether it's quarterbacks or any position on the field, but especially when it comes to quarterbacks, because you know the entire franchise is going to be on the back of that player. And you just you can talk to that player. You know, you get the 15 minutes at the combine. You get a whole day when you bring them into your facility. You talk to their college coaches, their parents, everybody that could possibly be involved. When you make a move like Ryan Pace did to trade up to get a quarterback, you have done all your homework. But that's still the young kid that hasn't played in the NFL yet. And we all change as human beings, right? As we get into our 20s, especially, that's a volatile time in anybody's life. So you never know how a player is really going to react until they get to the NFL. And I think that, you know, what we've learned from Mitch Trubisky is he's got a ton of talent. He's struggling to read the field. And there's a little bit of confidence that's lost. Maybe he's, slightly fragile. And that, I think, is what... Yeah, I just never forget the look in his eye after that game against the Packers in Week 1. There was something there that was really concerning to me after that game. And unfortunately, I think the results since then have shown that that he's lost confidence. What I will also say, though, if you can start to get this thing figured out from an execution standpoint, start to run the ball, maybe he'll hit some big plays, because that's going to set up bigger plays that Mitch can hit. And if he makes a couple of those and the Bears get a win, man, I've covered the league so long, a win in the NFL can cure a lot. Just one win, and we'll see where this thing goes from there. But right now, this is a very fragile time for the Chicago Bears. And if they lose this game to the Chargers, the season could spiral out of control.
That's, I don't even, The one thing I will say is if they do lose to the Chargers, I'm not hoping for that, but if they do lose to the Chargers, that Hampel being Kaz post game is going to be truly incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, can I just say real quickly that when you go out with them, it's great, but when they lose, and I'm not saying that I want them to lose, but it is incredible radio. So there is that. So I'm just trying to find a positive here.
There may have been a part of me, Jordan, that was slightly happy that we didn't have a post-game show after the Saints game.
Well,
just for my own health and well-being.
I thought that the station was going to go off the air. Like, somehow, like, OB was going to run into the control room and start breaking things. But
yeah. No, I love those guys. And, yeah. And win or lose, it'll be fun to talk to them again this week.
Yeah, well, Adam, I have to say, you do a fantastic job. It is great reading your stuff at WGNradio.com and hearing your hits all over the station. It's just really, really thorough, great work. So keep it up, all right?
Thanks, Jordan. Good to talk to you again.
All right, Adam Hogue joining us here on 720 WGN. More right after this. Good music choice right here. See, when John Mayer plays at the Trio, that's when you get the real good stuff. You ever see John Mayer Trio? Last year, I saw him in concert at the United Center. And he did like three different iterations in his shows where he was doing full band, then trio, then solo, then would go back to the full band. Man, that was a strong, strong show. John Mayer is one of the best guitarists alive. And when you see him with all he needs is a bass player and a drummer, literally, because his guitar playing is so good. It just fills in the breaks. Oh, man, I could talk music all night. But I do want to continue to talk about the Bears. We were just talking about it with Adam Hogue here on 720 WGN. Jordan Burnfield with you till 1 o'clock. You know, I hate to say this, but last year when Cody Parkey had the now infamous double doink of the field goal, even though there was a part of me that was obviously disappointed that the Bears didn't move on because they were in this great year and you were hoping maybe they'd get to the Super Bowl, there was a part of me, and Mike and Roger, I'm curious if you guys feel or if you felt the same way. But when he missed the kick, there was a part of me that laughed and was like, this is the most Bears thing to ever happen. You have this team that was built for success. They had this incredible defense, this young quarterback that appeared at the time to be sort of blossoming, not as great as you wanted, but like getting better or whatever. You had this fun coach, as Adam referred to him, as Swaggy Nagy, and everything is happy. And then the one thing that they really had a problem with was the kicker. And of course, it was the kicker that blows a kick and they lose. And this year, it was like, oh, they fixed it. They got the new kicker. And they got this great defense. But the one thing that you're worried about is the quarterback. And of course, as it turns out, that's what's making them not good. It's just like, I feel like I'm now programmed to just think that's so Bears. Whenever they don't do something, that's what comes back to kill them.
Every single year, yeah.
I agree 100%. Sure.
Right? So, like, I just feel like we used to do this with the Cubs, but now the Cubs are good, and a quote bad year for the Cubs is an 84 win season, which I was disappointed they didn't make the playoffs, and I felt like there's a litany of reasons why they should have. But the standards have completely changed when an 84 win team is one that we're hand wringing about. But it just feels almost comical to me. And I want Mitch Trubisky to do well. I want the Bears to do well. But it feels almost comical to me that this is the one area of the team where everyone was kind of nervous that he might not be that good. And of course, it turns out that he's not that good.
You know, it kind of reminds me of when you're in New York or you're on the streets of Chicago and you want a Rolex watch and you're like, I really should save up for a Rolex watch. I should put in the extra hours at work and get this done. Or I can go and get one on the street for $20. And even though it looks like a Rolex watch, you know it's going to fall apart in like a few weeks. And that's what I feel like the Bears often like come to be. Because it's like, at the end of the day, if you're not putting in the time, effort, money, and that all the other teams are doing, then it's going to fall apart at the end of the season. And that seems to be happening every single year.
But like this year, okay, so last year, it appeared that they had built this team that was destined for success. They had this defense that was swarming on all three levels of the defense. They had this rock-solid defensive line. Akeem Hicks was outstanding. You brought in Khalil Mack, who's like a one-man human wrecking crew, who's like one of the best football players I've ever watched. And I can't even believe he's on the Bears. He is so incredibly good. And then you have this defense with this emerging safety in Eddie Jackson, and all of a sudden they're this lightning-fast defense that is so good. And, you know, the quarterback hasn't played great, but it's okay because the defense is so good that they have nothing to worry about. And even at the beginning of this year, they were 3-1. It's like, okay, the Packers game was bad, but they're playing better, and they haven't played great, but they're still winning games, and it's all good. And the last 2 weeks, it has crashed in such a grandiose fashion that it just, like, I don't know if I'm just maturing as an adult or if something has happened to me, Roger. You've known me a long time. I'm not even mad. It's just sort of funny. It's like I can't believe that this has occurred.
Do you find yourself hanging your head and putting your hand over your face and shaking it back and forth more often than being angry?
Well,
you know what I'm saying? You're just like,
yes.
I can't believe this is happening again, right?
Yes. Well, it's more than just, you know,
you're getting older then.
I guess when I was a young pup, WGN radio
producer. Eyes blinded by the professional football players you covered.
Well, you know, it was sort of like I used to take these things so hard. And
right.
When the Cubs lost in 15, I didn't want to watch baseball the rest of the way. I mm-hmm. didn't want to see the Mets in the World Series against Kansas City because I was so angry about it. And then, you know, they won, and I sort of feel like it's given me this life epiphany where I don't treat sports the same way. But the fact that the Bears are 3-3 right now with a team that had legitimate football people saying the Bears could be a Super Bowl team, right? It wasn't mm-hmm. crazy that all these people were picking them to be a Super Bowl team. And we're not even in November, and now the discussion among smart football people is that the quarterback stinks, the Bears can't win the Super Bowl as currently constructed, and in the offseason, there could be grand changes. And younger me, mm-hmm. would have been like brooding around the office, would have been just despondent every day.
Right.
Why can my team not win? And instead, I just sort of think it's funny. Is that horrible?
No.
Maybe
you're
I'm
getting
just
older.
Slap happy
you're
tired.
Yeah, so you guys are on the younger end of the spectrum. So you have less years to make you jaded about Chicago sports teams. I've been around a while. I've been there in the 50s and 60s, watching the Bears, listening to them on WGN back in the early days when they played at Wrigley Field. You know, watching the Cubs lose every year, watching the Sox lose every... It was like that. And you got, as a Chicago sports fan, you just got jaded like that. It was, and you were mildly surprised if they won. And you tried to look at the other team and said, how did you screw up that our team won?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, but I would say, like, if I were a White Sox fan right now, and mm-hmm. I know that there's probably a lot of White Sox fans that are angry, and I get that, but if I were a White Sox fan right now, I think one of the most fun times as a sports fan is when you're building towards something.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So, think about where the Cubs were in the offseason of 2014. Like, they were mm-hmm. bad, but they were building. Jake Arrieta was emerging as this really good pitcher all of a sudden, and Kyle Hendricks was emerging as this really good pitcher, and they had brought up Javier Baez, and Anthony Rizzo was having a good year, and you were starting to see that there was the makings of a team that could be really good. And then obviously in 15 they turned it around, they won 97, in 16 they won the World Series.
Right.
I don't know if that's going to happen for the White Sox, but if I'm a White Sox fan, I'm feeling like, you know, we've got this exciting young team. I mean, they're bad now, but Yoan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez and these young pitchers, and what's going to happen when Michael Kopech comes back next year, and you add that to the mix. I feel like there's enough positive vibes around the White Sox, even though the record is bad currently, where I would feel excited to be a White Sox fan. But in football, you know, it felt like last year was the year that the Bears had emerged as this team that was not just building something, but had built it, right? They had built
right.
a 12-4
team. Came through with
team.
A great one loss.
Yeah.
They had young players. They had the defense was cementing. The offense was picking up. You had a young coaching staff. And you thought going into this season, you had high hopes.
Right. So you can't be this now. You can't be
Yes, you can.
So you're building this team that was 12-4. And, you know, we always joke about it. Theo Epstein famously said progress isn't linear. But if you have the 12-4 team, and
one
you have,
would think.
You would think that you right. wouldn't be 3-3 now and
exactly.
wanting to get rid of the quarterback, right? You can't have this year. This isn't good enough.
But if you're building, do you get rid of the quarterback?
I mean, right
if
now.
If you're building, because last year was a building season, this year was supposed to still be building.
Yes. We got a text, by the way, from the 224 that. Now, I've heard a lot of people call him Trubinsky, which is like sort of that Chicago thing, right?
Wait,
like,
where's the end come from?
Well,
Trubinsky?
I don't know why, but there's a lot of Chicago sports fan that thinks his name is Trubinsky.
No, it's like, not. Yeah.
I know, but just like with Josh McCown, everyone was calling him McGowan for some reason.
Oh, okay.
This guy texted Trubinsky.
Trubinsky?
Now, that's a new one. I like that one.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's like the alter bad version of Mitch Trubisky. Like last year, he was Trubisky, and this year he's Trubinsky.
Yeah,
and that's why the Bears are 3-3.
Alternate universe. I like that.
Yeah. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you want to lament about what's going on with the Bears, because it was fun last year. They were this out of nowhere building team with the fun young coach and the swaggy naggy and the club dub and all mm-hmm. the Joe Madden stuff that they just sort of took to the Bears. And it was fun. And this year, it's just a giant pile of stink.
Do you think that they overachieved last year?
I don't, maybe, but.
Because there wasn't much hope for them when it began. I mean, we had a couple of additions and, we can't wait to see what happens. And then they come up with the winning record on the season. Do you think that they overachieved last year
Maybe.
Against whoever they played?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe Cody Parkey was just the sign of things to come. 312-981-7200. That's the text line. It's also the phone line. If you want to commiserate about the Bears, we'll do that until midnight. And then Robbie Gold, the Chicago musician, not the former Bears kicker, will be in the studio on WGN. Well, I hope that Mitch Trubisky is bigger than his body gives him credit for, because right now, it's not good for the Chicago Bears quarterback. Welcome back. Jordan Bernfield with you, 720 WGN. Mike Heidemann is our producer. Roger Badish is in the newsroom. We're hanging out. Right now, I think we're having a cathartic commiseration session about the Chicago Bears. That's how I'm looking at it. Because, and 312-981-7200, if you want to text in or you want to call the show, Squat checked in and was saying that SI had the Bears at 7-9 in the preseason. I don't remember SI picking them to go 7-9, but apparently they knew something that we didn't. I just remember everyone in this media market, and maybe not everyone, that's probably too strong to say, but a lot of people in this media market, and I'm not ripping them. I'm saying like smart football people legitimately evaluating that this could be a team that might win fewer than 12 games this year, but would probably be, 11-5 football team, but have a shot to go to the Super Bowl, because even though you lost Vic Fangio as the defensive coordinator, he goes to Denver to become the head coach, presumably bringing in Chuck Pagano on the defensive side doesn't change a whole lot. And then you couple that with Mitch Trubisky entering his third year in the league, and he's got more of seasoning and more experience and more of an ability to take that next step as a quarterback. And as it's turned out, that is they're 3-3. So yes, in theory, if they beat the Chargers, who are just mired by injuries, they're 2-5, I believe, so far this year. If the Bears can go out there and beat the Chargers this weekend, you're 4-3. Presumably you're in a better position to try to make the playoffs. Maybe your season isn't lost here. I will say, though, Green Bay is 6-1 and Minnesota is 6-2, so that doesn't really bode well for the Bears, with two teams in their own division that seem to be pulling away from them. But the point is the season over? No. Could they turn things around in theory? Sure, they could. But you look at things right now, and I know that the nature of NFL football is that week to week, everything is either catastrophic or it's the greatest. And I realize that this is a reactionary sport and we spend a week between each game overanalyzing these things to death. But I have to say, when you watch the games that they've played in the last couple of weeks, especially this one last week, because you had two weeks to prepare for last week's game, and you come out there and look absolutely awful against a Saints team that is missing its starting quarterback and its starting running back, I think that there's legit reasons for the alarm bells there. And Mitch Trubisky had not played in several weeks, but for him to come back and look as bad as he did when, by all accounts, he was as close to 100% as you could be, I mean, come on. I think that what's always been interesting to me in this Trubisky era, if you will, as the Bears quarterback, is that all it took for fans to be excited about him was one half of one preseason game where he threw a couple of long passes, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, okay, we found the quarterback, Super Bears, Super Bowl, break out the grass skirts and the maracas, we're going to the Super Bowl, right? That's all it took. It took one half of one preseason game to decide that this guy was the quarterback of the future, beyond the fact that he was the number two pick and they traded up to get him and all that thing. So then he's played, I mean, he's had a couple of injuries here and there, but he's played now in three seasons, but you've really never seen him as a great quarterback. There have been a couple of isolated games, like last year's game against Tampa, against a real subpar defense, where he put up prolific numbers and big offensive performance, and you started to feel good about him. But I think the totality of Mitch Trubisky to this point has been, you know, decent young quarterback, clearly athletically talented, but really not that good. We were all kind of worried about saying maybe Mitch Trubisky's not that good. I think a lot of people were kind of trying not to say that because everyone was afraid that he was not that good. But then I think that this past week's game against the Saints solidified for the city of Chicago because he had 2 weeks to prepare, because this was a Saints team that, while they're very good this year, is not one that is so prolific defensively. The fact that he performed as poorly as he did and most of the numbers that he put up at the end of the game were in garbage time, I think now we have had a seismic shift in the way that we evaluate this quarterback and this team on a macro level because of last week. Last week solidified for everyone that Mitch Trubisky isn't that good and that the Bears are going to have to go in some kind of different direction to figure things out. And maybe, if nothing else, maybe last week having that decide that for everybody is a good thing. Because you know what? Now we have some clarity. He isn't really the quarterback that we would like to see out there. And as a result, next year the Bears are going to have to figure out a new quarterback for the position. Could he be marginal? Sure. Is he the quarterback that's going to take you to a Super Bowl? I don't think so. I think we've learned that by now. Okay, coming up after midnight, we will talk to another musician on the show, and this is going to be a lot of fun. Robbie Gold, gigging musician around Chicago, has played Wrigley Field at the National Anthem, has done lots of shows in and around the ballpark, but also just around the city. So you've probably heard him before, and he's going to play one of his original songs in our studio right after midnight here on 720 WGN.
As if we're true, there was a time when I was younger, innocence that never carry away. Here we go. I overcomplicate everything. As if we choose our brain.
Welcome back, 720 WGN. Jordan Bernfield with you tonight. This has been a fun show. We are talking music, we are talking sports, and we go back to music. And you just heard the song Overcomplicate by my friend Robbie Gold, who I think is sort of a veteran of WGN Radio at this point. He's been on the station many times. And if you're wondering, because I think I should point this out, Robbie Gold, the musician, not the former Bears kicker, but you get that all the time, don't you?
I do, and a bunch of people just turned off the radio. So when you informed them that it wasn't the real...
No, I think that you're the real Robbie Gold.
That's how I feel throughout my day, but then I realize there's another Robbie Golden. Well, not in town currently, but in general that people,
you know, though he's not having a great year, so I think you'd rather be
true?
You. Yeah.
It's good to know. I was always saying that because he's a good kicker, it's a good thing for me because people like him, so it's fine. But if he was bad, like if it was Cody Parkey or
yeah. Your name was Cody Parkey, that wouldn't be good.
No, my gigs would all get canceled.
Do you think you would change your name if it was Cody Parkey to get better
after,
business?
After the doink? Post doink, yes.
Yeah, you probably would have to.
Yeah.
But he is Robbie Gold, and that's G-O-L-D, not G-O-U-L-D. So if you want to check out his stuff, RobbieGoldMusic.com, R-O-B-B-I-E-G-O-L-D, music.com. But Robbie and I have known each other for many years. I think since we were probably, I don't know, 13 or so years old, sitting in the bleachers at Wrigley Field. And if you think you know Robbie's name, other than the fact that his name is also the Bears kicker, and you say, why do I know that name? Well, you've probably seen Robbie play out at Wrigley Field. He's played the Catalina Club, formerly the Captain Morgan Club, many times at Wrigley Field. You sang the national anthem at a game a few times now, right?
Yes, a few times now.
And you're a huge Cubs fan. So before we get to anything else, tell me what it was like to get to have those opportunities.
They're the only gigs I've ever been like painstakingly nervous for, like just because the weight of everyone in the stadium and just like always watching all the anthems and being critical of everyone's anthem. And then like you get up there and it's like, that's what you get for being critical of people. It's tough.
I mean, when you grew up, you're obviously a big Cubs fan. You're still a big Cubs fan. So when you're standing on the field at Wrigley and it's full of people, it's got to be a little bit daunting, especially because it's the anthem and everyone's paying attention to it.
It is. It's like usually at my gigs, I don't worry about missing words or making my own words up or, you know, doing it my own way, but you can't do that with the national anthem.
No doubt.
So, yeah, the words part is the biggest nerve-wracker for me.
Yeah, you don't want to end up like, what was it, like when Mo Cheeks had to help out that young girl.
Turned into a nice
Carl Lewis.
I'd take a viral moment like that any day, but
well, honestly,
you can't rely on it working out that way.
Would you want that, though, honestly? Like, you wouldn't want to screw up, obviously.
It would be an honest portrayal of myself, so I wouldn't shy away from it if that did happen. I try to let it roll off me.
So you've been playing in Chicago for a number of years now, and I think probably anyone that goes out in the city of Chicago has probably seen you play a bar or, you know, several different kind of venues. Tell me what a normal week is like for a gigging musician like yourself that's playing all over the place.
It's gotten a lot easier as I've been doing it longer because I've gotten involved with more and more lists of like musician lists at certain venues that like people put their gig up at the last minute if they need to find someone. So I'm on a few of those lists now. So it's really just like all day constantly. Either I'm reaching out to book gigs or I'll be getting emails or calls to book gigs. And then it's just rocking it when you get there.
So how many gigs do you think that you play in 1 week? I mean, how many days
at
this point?
In a good week, I'd say 5 to 7.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's like, you know, sometimes it's 7 to 10.
Other than playing Wrigley Field, was playing the cocktail hour at my wedding the best gig you've ever
had? By far the most, another nerve-wracking moment in my life. I said that it was just anthems, but Jordan Burnfield's wedding.
Yeah,
well.
Right. No, you crushed it. And what's great about watching you, because I've now seen you play in concert a few different times, is, you know, you've got so much great original music. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. I really am a fan of your original music, but you're also a guy that will go and you'll play a show full of covers and you'll do all kinds of things. I'm curious, as someone who has been playing all these gigs over the years, how do you sort of balance the notion that you want to be able to promote your own music, but you're also sometimes going to a gig and they want you to play, you know, pop hits or things
sure.
like that? How do you mix that?
Well, my biggest goal, I remember my biggest goal is before I started doing it professionally was that I want to pay all my bills with music. So the number one way to do that is playing cover gigs. And that's kind of become my identity in a way, like to make money. But it's as the more and more regular jobs you get, you can kind of take opportunities that don't necessarily pay as much, but they are like exposure opportunities or coming on the radio like today and playing original music. So I try to just like find a balance and I always try to sneak original songs. And we have a trick. I say if nobody claps, I don't claim them. So like I do that at all my gigs, even where I'm supposed to be playing covers. And then if they like it, you own it. But
when you're doing a show, if you feel like people are into it, you're playing, you know, I know that one of the songs that you've sort of made popular as your own version, as the Ignition remix, the R. Kelly version. So I know that you've played that a lot of times, and you know people will go see your shows and they know you for playing that song. But then when you play a show and you're playing several different songs that are popular by someone else, you just will slip in one of your own songs, or do you try to have a few things that you're trying to promote? How do you make those set lists?
Normally, if I feel like there's John Mayer fans in the room, or like Jason Mraz fans or Jack Johnson fans, so I'll play those songs first and see who's singing along and stuff. And then if people like those songs, I feel like my whole thing with making songs is like I've always wanted to make songs that I want to listen to, you know, so I don't want to have any songs that are like boring or obscure, too obscure sounding, that people just flip through it, you know. So I've just always tried to pick songs that I thought those people would like from other artists, and like play my own that are similar and kind of ride on that.
So your influences, it seems, from listening to your music for a long period of time. I mean, you and I are about the same age. We grew up together, so you know we're in our early to mid 30s. You have a very 90s sound, I think, to your music.
I'll take that,
and I mean that in a complimentary
sure.
way. But
absolutely,
it would make sense though that the 90s would have been the years that would have formed your musical identity. Is that how you kind of look at it yourself, or how would you describe your music?
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, cover wise, obviously, it's like. That's kind of provided my repertoire from what I, you know, from the songs I fell in love with and stuff. So all those songs, I know those to play them live. But Kurt Cobain and Billy Joe from Green Day. So I feel like those are like the bands that I learned all their songs right away. So that kind of influenced my songwriting process. And it's kind of like not as, I don't know, they're not, it's kind of a simple, I'm kind of a simple artist, I feel like. And that's kind of the 90s feel.
Now, what do you mean by simple?
Well, just kind of, there's not like synth in my songs. There's not a million tracks, you know, a million backup tracks. There's a few, but it's like just kind of stripped down. And I think like some of my favorite 90s music, like Nirvana, it's literally like two guitar, you know, bass and a guitar and drums, and that's it. So we love Power Trios, my band. But
so when you play, do you feel like because of your age, because of the style of music you play, because of the fact that a lot of people that are going out to bars in Chicago where you've played a lot of shows are somewhere between, you know, college age and our age or older than ours. It's sort of, you're in a perfect window to play music that has that kind of sound, to be able to be someone that people are going to hear and kind of like.
Exactly. Like across the board, you know, like any demographic, I try to be like, you know, something for everyone. And I feel like 90s stuff, like those, like all the acoustic singer songwriter type stuff. And then like Eagle Eye Cherry, like Save Tonight and those hits, like people of all, that like all genres like those songs.
We're talking to Robbie Gold. You've undoubtedly heard his music before, whether it was at Wrigley Field or whether it was at some bar around Chicago. Robbie's been playing gigs all over the place, and we're really glad to have him here on 720 WGN. I'm Jordan Burnfield. And Robbie, I think when you go out and play gigs where you're playing a lot of covers, I the first one that I thought of is, as I mentioned to you before, was, you know, I think of when you would play Ignition. What are the songs that you either get requested to play or you feel like you do play that are the biggest crowd pleasers that aren't your songs at a gig?
So it's funny that you say what I get requested. I'm like the worst request artist, like, because I just have to love a song to really have it in my data bank. I mean, I get John Mayer a ton because people say I sound like him. So people want to hear me do John Mayer songs. So that I've always taken that as like very high compliment because he's one of my favorite artists. So I have no problem breaking out the John Mayer tunes. But covers that get a good response, like Free Fallin' is one that's like across the board no matter where you play.
Now, like the Petty style or the Mayer style?
I have a mix. Make my own kind of my own style. It's a little like a little more energy than the John Mayer one, but not as classic rock sounding as the Petty.
Sure.
But then people do request originals every once in a while. I'll have some that does happen. So like when that happens, I'm just the happiest person in the world.
So let me get into that with you, because you've written, you have a couple of albums out. You are someone that writes their own music and has produced their own music, and you've gotten to play these great gigs. You've played with Ernie Banks in a music video with Ryan Shiverini. You've played Wrigley Field. You've played all these different places. You've been in and around Chicago. So you've been around enough places where people will get exposure to your music. So the first question I have is, which of your songs do you get requested the most? And which one do you feel like you're most known for at this point?
I think the one I'm most known for throughout, like, the people, my friends and everyone, and then also people at gigs, would be like How It Goes or Shade Away From Gone. Because those songs are just, and the recordings of them are so nice. And that's why I'm excited to be like recording this new song and add more to that, you know, to that playlist on Spotify. So get people more like, you know, into those songs. But
Yeah, I want to ask you about your new song. But when you're playing your original stuff and you're writing the original stuff, at what point or for which song did you write it and you recorded it and all of a sudden you said, that's it? That's if there's a song that I want to be known for, this is it.
I think How It Goes, or Shade Away From Gone, even though How It Goes is a little rhymey, like, and that's kind of my older style. And now my brother always told me what he thought was cool is when people take two words that don't rhyme and rhyme them. So that's kind of my new approach.
Hmm.
So when I listen to How It Goes, that kind of stands out to me. But across the board, the reaction to that one's been the most broad type of people that like it, like old to young. And so that's been the best response. So I think that's probably the one I would go with. Or Happy Lonely, actually. That's a song my mom tells me is like her anthem, she says. Like, not that my mom's a lonely person, but when she gets lonely, it's about, like, you know, just finding your own happy spot when you're doing your own thing. So that song would be a good one to be known by.
Okay, coming up next, more of our interview with Robbie Gold, the local Chicago musician, not the former Bears and current 49ers kicker. Talk to him about his new song, Memory, which actually isn't a new song. He'll explain. And he's also going to play it for us live here in studio. That's coming up next here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, 720 WGN. Jordan Burnfield with you tonight and our second musical guest of the evening, but the first one that we've had in studio. Kind enough to join us, Robbie Gold, local musician here in Chicago. You've probably seen him around the city when you've gone out to a bar, you've gone to Wrigley Field, or you've gone to several different venues where you could find him playing music and keeping the place lively and entertaining. And Robbie and I have known each other a long time. We are friends since we were teenagers, and it's really cool to have him in studio. So you have a new song called Memory. And one of the things that I always like when you have a friend who's a musician, sometimes they'll send you an Instagram or something like that where they've got audio that they want you to hear. You sent me a little clip of this a few days ago. I really loved hearing it. So tell us about Memory.
Well, it's really exciting to hear you call it a new song, because this is one of my songs that I've had for like 15 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wrote like so many songs in college, like over 40. And so every song that I've been recording is, for the most part, is a new song to people. But for me, it's old. So it's a kind of an energizing feeling to like for it to be new to someone. That's kind of my thrill with doing the small venue gigs around town, is like, for somebody, it's their first time seeing you, so it's exciting. There's an excitement to that.
So what went into that? You write this song 15 years ago, and now you decide that you're going to play it. Did you listen back to a recording of it and say, oh, this, you know, I think I need to put this out there? Or did it just come back to you, or how did that process
work? Yeah, I actually found like this old stack of CDs that I burned like in college when I got this little like 10-track recording studio thing, and it would freeze all the time. Like you'd get to the end of a song and you'd be about to finish recording it, and then it would go beep, and you would lose everything. But I had a few songs from that I recorded, and I played those in my car, and I was like, wow, I forgot about this song. And a lot of them are too corny, like the way they were to put out there. So then makes me want to rework them, and now I've kind of like applied it to a topic that's more relevant.
So that's really interesting to me, how sometimes, and you hear about a lot of artists that do this, that you've got music that you record, you just kind of put it in the can, and all of a sudden the light bulb pops on and you say, I want to record this and I want to do it. So Memory is an old song but a new song, and I'm honored that you're gonna play this song for us here
to play
on WGN. Let's hear Robbie Gold's version of Memory.
There's another version of my original song, Memory, out there. I would like to bring it forward. I'd like to hear it, but I don't think it exists. Here we go.
In this life, there are places that we're not gonna miss, and maybe like old buildings, people crumble and you're left with their memory. Ooh, yeah, let them stay with you, take away the pain. If they're within you, you'll be stronger than you can. Just let your heart beat in eternal strength. Time might take your health, your voice. You will always have that memory. Oh, no, 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 no. Memory. No one person should be trusted with providing all your happiness. Be self-content and just lock the ones you love right within that safe that you had. Let them stay with you. Take away the pain. If they're within you, you'll be stronger than you came. And just let your heart be in eternal strain. Time might take your health, your voice. You will always have that memory. And I'm not saying that strength's not of you. It's just one of those things in this life that I think that we really need to go through. I think I have it. So if you trust me, listen to my song and come along in your heart. Is your memory. Yeah. Them stay with you. Take away the pain. If they're within you, you'll be stronger than you can. And just let your heart be in eternal strain. Time might take your help, your voice. You will always have. Time might take your help, your voice. You will always have your memory.
Thank you, Bernie.
Dude, that was great. That was so awesome.
I think I flubbed one little part, but
see, no one will know that unless you tell them that. But I think it was fantastic.
I just did. But I'm honest. That's what I'm all about. It's honesty.
No, you know what though? But that was a great version of the song.
Thank you so much.
So what inspired that song when you wrote that? Because you said you wrote that in college.
You know, I wrote that kind of in a breakup-y phase in college about, you know, kind of along the theme of happy, lonely. But then as an adult, I've like kind of battled with worrying about like family members' health and like just worrying too much. And so that song kind of like, don't worry about everyone's health and worrying about losing people, but just like, keep them with you even when you've lost them. So keeps you strong.
So where are people going to be able to find you so that they can come watch you play?
I'm playing November 7th at Ambassador House and then November 9th at London House. Both are in downtown.
What time?
I'm starting at 8 p.m. at London House and I think it's 6 p.m. It's the Ambassador.
Yeah.
Ambassador Hotel.
Yeah.
In the pump room.
Okay.
So famous pump room. Yeah,
in it. The pump room.
Sure. And then November 17th at Bub City Rosemont.
Bub City Rosemont.
For brunch.
Awesome. All right. So then other than Wrigley Field or...
Wrigley and surrounding areas and...
Where do you want to play that you haven't played?
I'd love to play Space in Evanston. You got to get on like a bill there, and that's kind of like a more... that's a cool place because it's like originals. You can play all originals there. And I love Shuba's. I've played there, but I haven't played there recently. I would love to play there again.
Speaking of John Mayer, he was in town in August and talked about one of his first gigs at Shuba's.
And those are his best recordings, too,
right.
If you listen to those.
And how it just propelled him.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Like, I kind of made myself into a Chicago guy. I mean, I could do the, you know, on-the-road thing and... And it's appealing to me, but I love being here, and I love kind of making it a thing here.
He's Chicago's own. He's Robbie Gold. You can go to his website, robbiegoldmusic.com. He's on Twitter. He's on Instagram and Facebook, right? So you can find him on
YouTube
all the social media and YouTube, where I've watched several of your videos on YouTube. So I know that you're on YouTube as well. And I really appreciate you coming into
Thank
the studio, hanging out. It's cool because like Robbie and I used to sit in the bleachers together at Wrigley Field as teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
And now we're talking to each other on WGN.
How many out, Sammy? How many?
Yeah. Hey, he always turned around.
That's my beef, you know? It's like the guy's always been the nicest player to the fans. Let him back.
I would love to see him back. I think
just squash the beef, you know?
It's probably...
Even if you don't like him, just squash it so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
You know what? It's very fair. I would love for that to happen. I don't know if it's going to happen. One day it would be nice. I'd love to see him run back.
I'm going to let you in on something. It's going to happen.
Okay.
I don't know that from any way official, but it's going to happen.
I like it. That's Robbie Gold joining us here on WGN in studio. Thanks again so much for
coming. Thank you for having me, man.
All right, Robbie Gold, 720 WGN.